Covered the first trumpet, Revelation 8, 5 through 7. And then we went on and covered the second trumpet, which Revelation 8 and 8. Revelation 8, 5 through 7 is the first trumpet. Revelation 8, 8 and 9 are the second trumpet. And we were well into this third trumpet, which occurs during the tribulation period, during the time of God's wrath pouring out on this earth. And this third trumpet is a very interesting thing that God says is going to come upon the earth. And a third angel sounded, and there fell a great star from heaven, burning as it were a lamp. And it fell upon the third part of the rivers and upon the fountains of waters. And the name of that star is called Wormwood. And the third part of the waters became wormwood. And many men died of the waters because they were made bitter. Most commentaries will tell you that's a shooting star. A shooting star has three different names. When it's still out in space, it's called a meteoroid. Once it enters the Earth's atmosphere, the same body is called a meteor. If it is large enough to where it doesn't completely flake out into little tiny pieces, which most of them do before it hits the Earth due to the friction in the Earth's atmosphere, and it actually hits the Earth, then it's called a meteorite. But it's the same thing, so I'll call it a shooting star. Most commentaries tell you that's a shooting star. It's not a shooting star, because God has already made exactly what this is in his creation. He has made trillions of them. They completely surround our solar system. They are everywhere, and they vary in size around our solar system, from the size of my thumb, to the size of this building, to the size of the United States, to the size of the moon. They have certain characteristics, and it's what fits this perfectly. And a third angel sounded, there fell a great star from heaven, burning as it were a lamp. The lamp that is used here, the word for that, John wrote this in 95 and 96 A.D., was a Hebrew lamp. And in it you had olive oil, you had a piece of linen, flax, run down into the olive oil in this lamp. And when you lit it, it produced a light. You'd have a bright light. But since back then they didn't purify or refine the oil, it gave off a long flickering white tail as it lit up the whole room. That's exactly what a comet looks like, and a lot of you that saw the last one that came through here saw very much what John saw here, burning as it were a lamp. Stars don't put off a long flickering tail, and they don't burn like lamps, but comets do. And it fell upon the third part of the rivers and upon the fountains of waters. If this were a shooting star, and it were large enough to hit one-third of the earth, actually make contact with it, a shooting star is made of nickel, iron, and stone. That's what all meteorites are made of. And if it were large enough, when it actually didn't burn up, it would have to be gigantic in order for it to still be one-third the size of the Earth when it impacted. A solid object like that would tear the Earth in half. I've had people say, well, Brother Michael Murray, God could hold the Earth together. Well, I wholeheartedly agree. But if that's a solid object and it falls upon the third part of the river system of the Earth and the fountains of waters, which are the oceans and seas of the world, then pray tell me, where's your earthquake? There's no earthquake. And the name of the star is called Wormwood. It has a name. And a third part of the waters became wormwood. So why am I so sure it's a comet? It's the only thing in God's creation that God made that will do what that says. That's up in the heavens. Shooting stars are made of nickel, iron, and stone. Now, whatever this is, if the third part of the waters became wormwood, that means they turned into wormwood. What is wormwood? Whatever the chemical composition of wormwood is, it dissolves in water. Just like Kool-Aid powder, you have strawberry Kool-Aid powder, it's a solid, it's a powder. You put it in water, it dissolves. And the water becomes strawberry Kool-Aid. So this is a very simple principle. It's not an idea. It's not a theory. It's not a hypothesis. It's a fact that this turns into wormwood. So this thing has to dissolve in water. Comets are tremendous, great, dirty balls of ice. Most of a comet is solid ice. Inside, there are a multiplicity of all sorts of different sizes of little tiny pieces of nickel, iron, and stone. The preponderance of it, the most of it, is solid ice. They are great, dirty snowballs. And there are trillions of them that surround our solar system. God's going to pick one out and send it in. Well, as you all know, ice melts in water. When a comet hits the outer atmosphere of the Earth, it would not burn up like a shooting star that you see. It would not burn up. The ice doesn't burn. Ice melts. It would turn directly from solid ice into vapor, and it would not go through the water state, and it would be a release into the Earth's atmosphere by condensation, a tremendous dense white cloud. But there would not be the same effect if you had nickel, iron, and stone, because they do not dissolve in water. And many men died of the waters because they were made bitter. Iron doesn't make water bitter, nickel doesn't make water bitter, and stone doesn't make water bitter, so it cannot be a shooting star. But a comet does make it bitter, and a comet contains the sufficient poisons to do exactly what this says, and we've validated that from the many different probes that we've made in comets since that time. So I've already covered this extensively. I think we already have one tape of it. But there's something in the Gospel of Mark that's very interesting. And it's something that, if you consider it, it goes perfectly with the timing of the arrival of wormwood and a phenomena that everybody on the earth sees. And the stars of heaven shall fall, and the powers that are in heaven shall be shaken. And then shall they see the Son of Man coming in the clouds with great power and glory. Mark 13, 25 and 26. And the stars of heaven shall fall. People are looking up in the atmosphere. It's just before the coming of the Lord. And all of a sudden there are just trillions of shooting stars. In every single comet, say one the size of this room, the size of this sanctuary, there are trillions, and I said trillions, of pieces of little tiny nickel, iron, and stone. A lot of times when we go through where a comet has been in the past and melted, and the earth which rotates around the sun goes through that path like it did recently last November and December, you can just see trillions of these stars coming down. You'd swear that they're huge. You'd say, man, that's a big one. But actually, most of them are no bigger than our thumbnail. They're just illuminated because when they start to burn, because of the refractive and reflective powers of the atmosphere, what happens is it magnifies the personification of it, and you see it as a great, brilliant, blinding light in the sky, and you say, man, that must have been a big one, but usually just about the size of your thumbnail. In every one of these huge comets, gigantic balls of ice, there are trillions of pieces of nickel, iron, and stone embedded in the ice just like this. So what would happen if a comet entered the Earth's atmosphere? We're talking about all the stars. We're talking about, and the stars of heaven shall fall. Well, a comet is a great dirty ice ball. The nucleus of a comet is composed of solidified gases that have merged into a gigantic maze of ice. Comets have been correctly labeled as great dirty ice balls. The dirty portion, shown above as black blotches, consist of solid space debris embedded in the outer veneer of the ice, pieces of nickel, iron, and stone which became embedded upon contact with the comet as it moved through outer space. Most of a comet, as you can see on this chart, is ice. But in it, it has all sorts of specks, some larger than others, and they're made of nickel, iron, and stone. So what would happen if let's go to a shooting star. Let's go to a meteor, meteoroid, meteorite, something made of solid nickel, iron, stone, not a comet. What would happen? When that solid object enters the Earth's atmosphere, it burns. And most of them don't ever make it to the surface, and it just burns and fragments into little tiny pieces. But a comet is made of ice. Ice doesn't burn. What happens? When it's exposed to extreme heat, it goes directly from a solid ice into a vapor by condensation and produces a tremendous cloud. So what is it that happens that causes people to look up in the sky and see these stars falling? If a comet entered the Earth's atmosphere, all of the ice would melt. As the comet headed down toward the Earth, the tremendous frictional pressures, heat generated on the outer surface of the comet, just like it would be generated on a regular shooting star, meteor, meteoroid, meteorite, but on the ice, it turns it into a gigantic cloud. Now, you may say, well, Brother McElmurray, that's just a theory. No, this is the way God made nature. And what would happen when it turned from a solid into a vapor? Thick, thick, thick cloud, a thick, thick, thick cloud. What happens? There's a natural deceleration. You can take something that's very light and try to throw it, and you can't throw it very far. But you take something that's very hard, like a piece of nickel, iron, stone, you can throw it a long way. But whenever the ice begins to melt and turn into a thick, 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 thick cloud, all of that that's being formed just gently comes down toward the earth. Not rapidly, because it's decelerating like mad, because it's changed from a solid into a vapor. But what about all those pieces of nickel, iron, and stone? As this melts, as it turns into a vapor, these pieces of nickel, iron, and stone, they keep their same impetus. They keep their same speed, virtually. And they start to turn into flaming pictures in heaven like shooting stars, and you see it looks like all the stars in heaven are falling to the earth. That's why I believe, another reason I believe that's a comet, because a comet would actually create a tremendous dense cloud, And as it did, the cloud would decelerate, slow down as it headed toward the earth, but the pieces of nickel, iron, and stone would not, and they would turn and flash just like stars falling from heaven, what we normally call shooting stars. Well, what would happen to this cloud? This thick cloud would eventually come down and settle on the earth. Now, it would take its time. That's why there's no earthquake. That's why when this comet comes through, it doesn't generate an earthquake. It turns into a gigantic, humongous cloud that settles over one-third of the earth as a very thick, dense cloud of vapor. And it's what's in this vapor that's very interesting. There's poison in it. Revelation 6:13, the stars of heaven fell into the earth, even as a fig tree casteth her untimely figs when she is shaken of a mighty wind. But it would be preceded, before it settled on the earth, because it's decelerating, it would be preceded by a shower of stars falling, shooting stars, that would put to shame any display of shooting stars we've ever had in the nature of the earth, because these would be burning in our atmosphere, heading straight toward the earth. Now, we talked about the waters becoming wormwood, Death Star. And the name of the star is called Wormwood, and the third part of the waters became wormwood. Now, when this comet enters the Earth's atmosphere and comes down on the Earth and settles on it in that vapor, whatever this comet is made of, and they're all basically made of the same thing, the ice content's basically the same with all comets, then this particular ice melt, as it hits on the Earth, the question is, if a comet were to do what I say, and can it dissolve in water? Now, if a comet does not dissolve in water, and a third part of the waters became wormwood, then there's no way that what I'm telling you can be the truth. We now know what the chemical composition of a comet is. We've known for a long time because we used to get it by spectrographic analysis, because every single element in the universe radiates at a specific wave band. So we would get waves coming in, light waves from comets, and we would measure those on spectrographic analysis machines, and it would tell us basically what the chemical composition was. But recently, in recent times, we've been able to probe comets, particularly Halley's comets, and we've actually determined the chemical composition. So if a comet entered the Earth's atmosphere, here's the nucleus, it's solid ice. Here's the coma, that's the thick part of the cloud that you can see as you watch it in the heavens. Sometimes if it's burning, if it's melting enough, you can even see the tail with the naked eye. The actual tail back here, the tail of Halley's comet in 1910 was about 150 million miles long, 150 million miles long. It's very thin, very vaporous, and you'd have to have a telescope to pick it up. Well, what about melting? Now, God made the Earth's atmosphere, and God made everything on the Earth and everything above the Earth and everything under it. He made all the elements to function in a certain way toward one another. He made the molecular structure such that if one has a certain attraction for another, then they merge together and form into a single new compound. So the same God who wrote these prophecies in the book of Revelation is the same God who has chosen this particular phenomena to produce the third trumpet's terrifying holocaust. These are the primary solidified gases of a comet. This is not a theory, it's a fact. Hydrogen, helium, carbon, nitrogen, oxygen. This next statement is not a theory, it's not a premise, it's not an idea, it's not a hypothesis, it's a fact. If you subject these gases, hydrogen, helium, carbon, nitrogen, and oxygen, to ultraviolet radiation melting, which is what happens when the actual solar wind and the solar rays from the sun begin to cause the comet to melt and to put in this long tail, the gas is formed by ultraviolet radiation melting. Methane, ammonia, hydrogen cyanide, cyanogen, methyl cyanide. Now, what's important about this? Methane dissolves in water, ammonia dissolves in water, hydrogen chloride dissolves in water, cyanogen dissolves in water, and methyl cyanide dissolves in water. Hydrogen cyanide, cyanogen, and methyl cyanide are some of the most deadly poisons known to man, and they are 100% water soluble. So whatever this is, when it falls upon the fountains of waters, the oceans and seas of the world, and when it falls upon the river system, the river structure of man, from which he gets his drinking water to a large extent, then the truth of the matter is, it's going to poison it. It's also going to give it a bitter taste. How will one-third of man's water supply be affected? Well, Don and I went to school together at Chanuteville in Illinois, and they would take us up every once in a while, and we'd take some classes up at University of Chicago, at least the class I did when went through, they'd take us up every once in a while. I want you to notice, and a third part of the creatures which were in the sea and had life died, and the third part of the ships were destroyed. Well, I've always believed that God trained me before he ever called me. The things that God put me into, I had no desire to go into. I had no desire to be a meteorologist. Don, when they first told me I was going to Met Tech School, I thought it was a study of rocks, falling meteors. I didn't know anything about meteorology. But it was God's will that I learned the things I've learned. People say, well, that's just your opinion. Well, yeah, it is just my opinion, but nevertheless, I hold it, and I hold it very strongly. Because there are some things that I was taught when I was taking my meteorological courses in Illinois about how the Earth's system works. And Don will tell you this is the simplest system of all. But it was written about a long time ago by a man named Solomon, who was the second wisest man who ever lived. Christ, of course, being the wisest. Ecclesiastes 1 and 7. All the rivers run into the sea. In the ancient times, when this was written, what would happen would be this. The people would wander down to the seashore. They would see all the rivers coming out from the inside the territory and the land masses, and all the water would go into the oceans and seas the world. Yet they'd go down there every day, and the sea would be at the same level. They couldn't understand how all that water kept running out into the oceans and seas of the world, and yet the sea always remained the same level. Because it would certainly seem that with all that water continuing to run out there, the sea would just keep rising, but it didn't. The reason it didn't is because God devised a marvelous, wonderful system called the hydrological cycle by which he brings the water back to the land. Every day, the sun shines on the oceans and seas of the world, on streams and on creeks, bayous, all sorts of water surfaces. When it does, it releases into the atmosphere evaporation. The evaporation turns into liquid moisture and begins to rise. It rises and cools at the rate of 1 degree Celsius for every 100 meters it is lifted. As it is lifted, the water droplets, because the temperature is lowered, as it is being lifted, they actually begin to condense upon one another and they form a cloud. The rising air expands and cools. They lift up over higher terrain or over frontal surfaces. There are several different ways this happens. But in the long run, if the uplift is sufficient, the cloud not only is visible as a cloud, but it begins to put out precipitation upon the earth. That precipitation falls upon the earth, comes back flowing through these streams, rivers, creeks, and lakes, and eventually goes back to the sea from which it originally came. This is called the hydrological cycle. Solomon described it perfectly. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. He tells you why. Under the place from whence the rivers come, thither they return again. It goes up, cools, returns as moisture, and it's known as the hydrological cycle. Now, the reason I've shown you that is because that is exactly what the comet Wormwood is going to get caught up in. The comet Wormwood is going to come into this system. God is going to pick out a comet. When comets come in, they either go around the sun or run into the sun or run into something on their way to an orbit around the sun. But virtually all of them head straight for the sun. They go all the way around the sun. Once in a while, one will run into the sun. Now, you can see the sun on this diagram. You can see the path of the comet. You can see the earth also rotates around the sun. Now, God's going to pick out a comet at just the right angle, at just the right time, to suit his purposes, just the right size. He's got trillions of them out there to choose from. He made every one of them. He's going to send it into our solar system. Once a comet comes out of the Oort cloud, it's called the Oort cloud, trillions of comets that surround our solar system, once it comes into our solar system, up around Neptune, Uranus, through there, and heads into it, it always heads toward the sun. He's going to pick one out, and it heads toward the sun. But God knows the elliptical speed of the earth and all the different parameters that involve everything in science regarding the earth. He'll pick this comet out where it will come in, and it will actually strike the earth in its way around the sun. I don't know if it'll come in at a 65-degree angle, a 70-degree angle, 45-degree angle. I have no way of knowing. But the Bible definitely indicates it will enter into our solar system. When it does, it will come into our atmosphere eventually. As it begins to make contact with the earth, it will melt. And after the stars have solid pieces of nickel, iron, and stone have produced the greatest falling star parade and viewing scene that's ever been seen on this earth, then the cloud will come in and settle. Where will it settle? It will settle over the actual hydrological system of the earth, where the moisture is carried from the oceans and seas of the world back in like this. It will get caught up in this cycle over one-third of the earth. So if you have a situation where you have something in this that's poisonous, then it will get caught up in that system over one-third of the earth. Now, this is the chemical formula for one of the cyanogen gases in comets. Cyanogen gas plus water vapor gas equals hydrochloric acid plus a radical. These formulas that I'm showing you, I'm sorry if they appear to be too scientific, but the truth of the matter is that's a very simple principle. It's one that God initiated. It's one that God formed. It's one that God makes work. So this would be your comet. In that comet are methane, ammonia, methyl cyanide, hydrogen cyanide, and cyanogen. This is the hydrological system in which it would be caught up. A comet passing through the Earth's atmosphere would not burn up. It would melt and thereby release cyanogen gas to react with the various gases of which the atmosphere is composed. These reactions would produce several poisonous cyanogen compounds. One of these compounds would be hydrocyanic acid. The chemical mixing of hydrocyanic acid with water vapor in the Earth's hydrological cycle would produce the chemical reaction shown above on the diagram. The gradual mixing of cyanogen gas with water vapor would cause hydrocyanic acid to precipitate out in raindrops over a large part of the Earth's surface, thereby poisoning many local water supplies. Please compare the similarities between hydrocyanic acid and wormwood found in the following definitions from the Modern Chemist Handbook and Old Bible Dictionaries. This is from the actual Modern Chemist Handbook. Hydrocyanic acid, HNC, a colorless water-soluble liquid that solidifies at minus 15 degrees Celsius and boils into a gaseous form at 25 degrees Celsius. That's 77 degrees Fahrenheit. It is a very poisonous, aromatic acid with a bitter taste. Now notice the biblical description of wormwood in the Bible. It's aromatic. Remember, hydrocyanic acid is an aromatic acid with a bitter taste. The biblical definition of wormwood, an aromatic herb of the sunflower family. Oil of wormwood has a bitter taste. It was used in John's day to destroy intestinal worms and is native to Eurasia. For those who are still here, this is an antidote for hydrocyanic acid poisoning. Antidotes for hydrocyanic poisoning, hydrogen peroxide internally, artificial respiration, breathing ammonia or chlorine from chlorinated lime, ferrous sulfate followed by potassium carbonate. So I don't know exactly where this comet's going to fall on the Earth. The Bible doesn't say. My guess is, pure guess, is it would settle on the area of greatest sinfulness. Now, I know that you take cities like San Francisco and Los Angeles and New Orleans. These are some of the most ungodly cities in the world. And in this country, we have been blessed by God for a long time. So when we look at the homosexuality, the lesbianism, the ungodliness that's going on across the United States, we often tend to think that God's judgment's going to be greatest on us. Well, we are going to be judged, and I don't question that. But the rest of the world, you go to Europe, I've spent quite a bit of time over there. You go over to the Mideast, the followers of Islam. You go into predominantly Catholic Europe. You talk about us being ungodly. They make us look like little Lord Fauntleroy. And so my suspicion is this comet that comes down on one-third of this planet will probably affect the Mideast, Europe, North Africa, India, Russia, China. That's where I think it will come down. However, that's just opinion, and I admit that. So when this comes down, and a third angel sounded, and there fell a great star from heaven, burning as it were a lamp, and it fell upon the third part of the rivers and upon the fountains of waters. As it first comes in, as the ice is melting, it will put out ahead of it, as the actual deceleration of the cloud occurs, the solid pieces of nickel, iron, and stone go way out ahead of it, still moving at the same speed and burning with tremendous light to produce a tremendous star array. Revelation 6:13, the stars of heaven fell into the earth, even as a fig tree casteth her untimely figs when she is shaken of a mighty wind. And the name of the star is called Wormwood, and the third part of the waters became wormwood, and many men died of the waters because they were made bitter. It poisons the water, and it makes it taste bitter. In all the history of the earth, we have had literally thousands and thousands and thousands of shooting stars, meteors, meteoroids, meteorites, nickel, iron, and stone, solid nickel, iron, and stone, not a comet, but a shooting star. We've had thousands of these fall in stock ponds, bayous, all sorts of man's water supply, water reservoir, and we've had them fall in isolated areas where that was the total drinking supply in a small pond. In all the history of God's earth, there has never been one single recorded case of any meteoric poisoning. There has been no shooting star poison. Nickel, iron, and stone are not poisonous, but the chemical composition of a comet is very, very poisonous. So whenever this enters the Earth's atmosphere, a comet passing through the Earth's atmosphere would not burn up. It would melt and thereby release cyanogen gas to react with the various gases of which the atmosphere is composed.
These reactions would produce several poisonous cyanogen compounds. One of these compounds would be hydrocyanic acid. The chemical mixing of hydrocyanic acid with water vapor in the Earth's hydrological cycle would produce the chemical reaction shown above the diagram. 1 mole of cyanogen gas plus 2 moles of water vapor gas would equal 2 moles of hydrocyanic acid plus the radical. These reactions would produce several poisonous cyanogen compounds. One of these compounds would be hydrocyanic acid. The chemical mixing of hydrocyanic acid with water vapor in the Earth's hydrological cycle would produce the chemical reaction shown above this diagram. The gradual mixing of cyanogen gas with water vapor would cause hydrocyanic acid to precipitate out in raindrops over a large part of the Earth's surface, thereby poisoning many local water supplies. I've already read you the definition of hydrocyanic acid and wormwood. Now, one of the problems I've had as I've gone from place to place, and I appreciate this man doing it. As far as I know, he was a believer. And Flammarion predicted in 1910, when Halley's Comet came through, that it was going to poison man's water supply. The problem is, we were supposed to go through the tail of Halley's Comet. Well, this tail is 150 million miles long. Did it have traces of cyanogen poison in it? You bet it did. But it was so small and so minute that it could not possibly poison man's water supply. On February 6, 1910, the director of Yerkes Observatory and his assistants trained their telescope on the comet to examine the spectrum of its gases. By comparing the varicolored lines of the comet's spectrum with the lines radiated by specific gases, a minute quantity of cyanogen was detected. When mixed with hydrogen, cyanogen produces the deadly poison hydrogen cyanide or prussic acid. A grain of its potassium salt touched the tongue brings instant death. The comet's tail contained this gas, but in such minute quantities that it was absolutely impossible for it to do what the Bible indicates it could do if it struck the earth. The Bible indicates it's going to strike the earth. Flammarion predicted that it would poison man's water supply by passing through the tail. When God made everything in the universe, he made it with molecules. He also made comets with molecules. These that you see here, 17, 18, 19, and 20, are all deadly poisonous gases. All of them have 100% water efficiency in actually mingling with water itself. Now, this is something that I knew long ago, back in the 60s and 70s. This is what is known as a spectrograph of a comet. You take the actual elements, God made every one of them to radiate at a different band length. So if you can get the light from something, even if it's a distant star or planet, you can tell what the chemical composition is. Many of these molecules detected in comets, however, are not the ones we are likely to find on the Earth or any other planet. You will notice one of them is cyanogen. Now we're told, and many men died of the waters. Hydrogen cyanide is one of the most deadly poisons known to man. Cyanogen is one of the most deadly poisons known to man, and so is methylcyanide. Here's the interesting thing about that. Every one of these dissolves in water with 100% efficiency. I mean, they mingle together perfectly. God made the molecular structure that way. Hydrogen cyanide is 100% effective in water. So is cyanogen and so is methylcyanide. 100% complete dissolving in water, and it merely transfers its killing power over to the water in which it is dissolved. Now, I started presenting this about a comet in 1978, and then we didn't have any probes of comets. All we had was a spectrographic analysis. But knowing what I know about the spectrograph and the different rays of the sun and all the way from ultraviolet to infrared, and knowing that we could analyze those and tell what was in a comet, I didn't have any hesitation or reservation to tell people this was a comet. And many men died of the waters because they were made bitter. That was in 1978. Quite frankly, I have to admit, my carnal man was scared to death, and also my spiritual man was a little shook. My carnal man didn't want to be embarrassed. All of a sudden, it announced they were launching a flotilla, and they were going to go out and examine Halley's Comet. A lot of people call that Halley's Comet. It's Halley's Comet. They were going to go out and examine Halley's Comet. The Italians were going to send one up, Giotto. The Russians were sending up Vega 1 and Vega 2. The Japanese were sending in Sakakti and Suyakti. You say, well, that doesn't look like the way they're... I don't know how to pronounce these names. But the Japanese were going to send up two. The Russians were going to send up two. And the Italians were going to send up one. They were going to send these up, and they were going to make probes into the coma and into the very nucleus itself and try to ascertain what is the chemical composition of a comet. Well, I had already told people that there was more than enough cyanogenic types of compounds in all comets that any one of them could do what the Lord indicated this wormwood could do. So out came all this information. Comet is coming. Well, I put on an outward show of confidence. Quite frankly, my carnal man was scared to death, because I knew that if what I had taught turned out to be wrong, that people were going to discredit me personally, and nobody likes to be discredited personally. My carnal man certainly doesn't. And I knew they wouldn't listen to anything else I had to say in this lecture series, because once you say something is right and it's discovered to be wrong, people are not very forgiving. So I stuck to my guns. I said, when they make these probes, they will discover even more poison than I have told you was in there. You say, well, did you really believe that? Well, I just made a prediction, and quite frankly, it was mostly bravado. It was mostly just a scared man going into a ring to fight an opponent that he knows is going to whip him, but he psychs himself up and makes himself believe it's true. Well, whatever this is, Revelation 8:11, it poisons men, makes them die, and it makes them bitter. Well, what was in the probe? Well, naturally, I'm going to show you what was in the probe, because I was right. You say, what would happen if you discovered you were wrong? Well, I just quit talking about this altogether. You say, well, that's pretty sneaky, but it's not lying, is it? I just kind of cover it over and go on and act like if anybody asked me, I'd tell them the truth. Well, in this particular case, I was fully validated. We made a probe and got all the way into the nucleus. Jets of cyanogen were discovered in the inner coma using special filters on a ground-based telescope. Now, I want you to notice, adding false colors to define areas of heavy common concentration, astronomers isolated strong jets of cyanogen in orange. We're going to take a look at this in color in a moment. Streaming out some 60,000 kilometers. Now, these are strong jets of cyanogen. This is the poison. Some 60,000 kilometers in lighter concentrations, yellow to blue. Dark gray indicates the areas of weakest concentration. Previously thought to be a trace gas, just a little. They discovered they were wrong. Previously thought to be a trace gas released as ice vaporizes, cyanogen and jets suggested is shaken loose from complex organic dust particles from Halley's nucleus. The pinwheel effect results from rotation of the nucleus. Since then, we've discovered that all comets have this basic same composition. This is a color picture of what it looked like inside Halley's comet. Now notice, strong jets. Astronomers isolated strong jets. Notice, strong jets of cyanogen. They're in orange. Streaming out some 60,000 kilometers and lighter concentrations, yellow and blue, you see on the diagram. Dark gray indicates areas of weakest occurrence. Now, what's the crux of this? You've got more poison in a comet than you can imagine. And God made it, and it's made of ice, and it dissolves in water, and God's already made this comet wormwood. It's out there waiting to come in. And when God gets ready to pull it in, he's going to bring it in. Now, this last comet, the Hale-Bopp comet, that almost sounds like a rock group, doesn't it? Hale-Bopp comet. The spectrum and spatial distribution of cyanogen in comet Hale-Bopp. Here's what we discovered. It sharply peaked near the center. A cyanogen gas production of 1.2 plus or minus of 0.3 times 10 to the 26 molecules per second was derived. What this all amounts to is there was a lot of cyanogen in it. Now, I don't know which comet he's going to pick. No one does. We found a type of hydrogen cyanide that's otherwise seen only in interstellar space. This was concerning Hale-Bopp. Ammonia, methane, alcohol, formaldehyde. Everything that showed up in the spectrographic analysis was fully confirmed when we made the probe. So what do you have? In a comet, you have methane, ammonia, methyl cyanide, hydrogen cyanide, and cyanogen. These last three are deadly poisons. They all dissolve in water. You're going to have a comet come into our solar system. It's going to fall upon the third part of the rivers and upon the fountains of waters. It's not going to fall on them as a solid object. It's going to fall as a tremendous gas cloud. Cyanogen is a water-soluble, highly poisonous gas that freezes into a liquid at minus 34 degrees centigrade. Hydrocyanic acid is a colorless, water-soluble liquid that solidifies at minus 15 degrees centigrade or Celsius and boils into a gaseous form at 25 degrees Celsius, 77 degrees Fahrenheit. It is a very poisonous aromatic acid with a bitter taste. As I showed you earlier, the biblical definition of wormwood, a plant, an aromatic herb of the sunflower family, oil of wormwood has a bitter taste. It was used in John's day to destroy intestinal worms and is native to Eurasia. It either killed you or cured you. Well, God could pick anyone he wanted at any time. Right now, there is a huge comet called Chiron. And Chiron is about 10 times as large as Halley's Comet. It's a very interesting comet. It's right on the outer fringe of our solar system. It hasn't come in yet. Chiron, cyanogen gas emission detected. They've detected this at a very long distance. Cyanogen is commonly found in the spectra of the nuclei and ionized gas tails of comet, but it has never been detected at such a great distance from the sun. Cyanogen results from the breakup of parent molecules such as hydrogen cyanide. So this Chiron is interesting. Chiron is about 10 times as large as Halley's Comet. Chiron is essentially a dirty snowball composed of water, gas, and carbon dioxide that is gradually circling closer to the sun. If that's the one he chose, so be it. I don't know which one God's going to bring in. No one does. But I do know this. That's a comet. And I also know this. It's coming. Now, I realize, because I'm a scientist, sometimes it almost seems like I'm disassociated from spiritual things. And I give you an all nice technical discourse on why I believe that's coming. But you must not lose the really important impact of what I'm saying. Why do I go to all that trouble to prove people that's coming? I want you to see how real God is. I want you to see how God plans and programs everything. I want you to see that he's not only all-powerful, he's all-knowing. And he also plans things centuries in advance, and he knows the future, the past, and the present. I want you to see that when God says something, you can count on it. And I want you to understand that whatever time you and I have left here, and I certainly include myself, we better make the best of it. If you're already children of God, you better start seeking the kingdom of God. You better start seeking the things of the kingdom of God. And you better get your act and your life straight according to God's rules and regulations and not your own ideas of what God wants for worship, but what the Bible indicates God wants for worship. You better get your heart and your life in one of God's churches, and you better serve him to the utmost of your ability until he comes. That's why I'm showing you this. You say, well, Brother Michael Murray, listen, our God is real. And it's not just a feeling in my heart. My God is real, real in my soul. That's nice. And I do feel good when I sing it. But the God whom I know is very real. And he's proven himself over and over and over again. So I show you this to make you realize how short the time is. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to see what's happening in this country and all over the world. We have turned into an immoral, ungodly society whose sinfulness knows no bounds. Brothers and sisters in Christ, it's time for his coming. And when he comes, you don't want to be caught in all this hell. So you need to think about it, you need to pray about it. Whatever happens, you need to turn your life over to the Lord. But even if this were thousands of years from now when Jesus came, you're going to die. That's a fact. And you better get your life straightened out before you die and live for the Lord. Kenneth, would you